Standing tall against a multinational corporate agenda. The Rick Smith Show.
All the things you want are real.
You have you to complete, and there is no deal.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Our quote of the day comes from U.S. Education Secretary John King, who's not very happy, actually fairly unhappy about the, quote, arbitrary cap on the growth of high-performing charters. He says it is a mistake in terms of our goal of trying to improve opportunity for all kids. And why he's talking about this, he's really ticked off at the NAACP, who recently said, hey, you know what, let's put a moratorium on these charters, because guess what, they're not doing what we were told they were going to do. And in fact, they're not doing any better than the public schools. Maybe we should take a look at this, maybe hold them accountable, maybe have some transparency, things like that. Not so much from our Secretary of Education, who, after all, was the head of a charter school. Kind of makes you wonder. Anyway, here in Pennsylvania, House Bill 530 is making its way through the General Assembly, again, to expand and make the charter situation here in the Commonwealth even worse. And I thought it couldn't possibly get any worse. And here to talk a little bit about that, our good friend, Attorney Erwin Aronson. Erwin, thanks for taking time for us.
Good to be here, Rick. How are you?
I am good. But, you know, I look at this statement by our Secretary of Education, who seems to be very happy with the charter performance around the country, especially here in Pennsylvania.
Well, there's really very, very little to be happy about regarding charter school performance in Pennsylvania or anywhere in the country. There are a very small handful of brick-and-mortar charter schools that are doing an okay job, that are at least equal to the performance of the typical school district, public school district operated schools. It's not fair to say typical public schools, because charters are publicly funded schools too. They just don't have any transparency or accountability or responsibility to the public.
Right.
But other than that very small handful, the experience and the evidence is that charter schools don't perform as well, and certainly do not perform better on the whole than public school district operated schools. And a subset of the charters known as the cyber charter schools undertake activity that is decidedly, remarkably, offensively, deeply, troublesomely much worse than school district operated schools.
Right. But here's the thing, Erwin. The Urban Prep Academy in Chicago is sending 100% of their students off, their seniors off to college this year. So, you know, charters must be doing great.
Well, they are, until you start to peel that onion, Rick, and see what they do to get kids to leave their school before they get to be seniors so they can say they send 100% of their seniors. Let's take a look at the freshmen, sophomores, and juniors, and see what their experience has been, because that school notoriously culls out their classes and does what is known in the business as creaming, so that by the time a freshman gets to be a senior, there are far fewer seniors than there were in that child's freshman class.
So what you're saying then is the 167 seniors who are at this Urban Prep Academies probably would have gone to college anyway, depending, no matter where they went to school, and they were just able to bring them all together.
Well, they were able to bring them together. They took those kids out of their other schools where they would have been shining examples for other children known as classmates, and encouraged others on, and they would have, you know, they're bright kids, and they're doing well, and they got a good education, they would have gotten a good education, and used it in a traditional public school as well, not only or limited to charters. That is precisely the point.
But, you know, I look at this, and I can't tell you how many times I've had people say, see, there's a school, 100% going to college. And I go, well, for every one of those examples, for every Urban Prep Academy, there's probably 1,000 frontier virtual cyber charters out there who have really left kids in the lurch. And is this what we really want? And this is why I think the NAACP was correct in calling for a moratorium and having a set of guidelines of saying, look, before we move forward, we should have accountability and transparency and judge them based on apples and apples instead of what we're doing now.
Oh, it's absolutely correct. And there is no doubt, none whatsoever, that the NAACP is on the cutting edge of this, and their report, which I have read in some detail, that led to their recommendation and their announcement, is grounded and based upon data, not assumptions, not emotions. Look, the advocates for charter schools are always telling us about how their mission is to expand choice. And candidly, people like us recognize that if choice is the issue, we have 500 school districts in Pennsylvania that are all funded by the taxpayers. And there is no reason whatsoever why children should not have, if choice is the issue, the choice of whatever public school district in which their parents and they would like to attend, who should be able to go to that school. And that is true school choice. And it's not school choice that drains off funding from public school district, that creams away certain kinds of kids, certain kinds of students, while crushing so many others. It's not this corporatization and monetization, if you will, of public education, where the taxpayers are funding wholly private businesses that call themselves charter operators.
So, you know, here in Pennsylvania, I don't know if you saw the John Oliver thing, basically calling Pennsylvania the worst in the country. And there was some push to quote unquote reform the charters here in House Bill 530. Where is that, and what are your thoughts on it?
Well, my thoughts on that are that House Bill 530 was not reform, and it was wildly unfair to call it or describe it as reform. What it was and what it is a broad-based wholesale expansion of charter schools with no oversight and conferring upon charter operators the right to grow without any oversight, and basically also impose a state unfunded taxpayer-financed mandate on public school districts that would be compelled to fund charters and cyber charters without any limit, without any responsiveness, without any responsibility, without any meaningful oversight or any transparency, as much and as broadly as privateers would want them to grow. And that was called reform. Existing charters could merge, they could expand, they could have unlimited enrollments under that legislation. And it did very little and does very little for our public school districts, for families with kids in schools, for dealing with the systemic dismantling of public school responsibility engaged in by the Corbett administration and continued by the Pennsylvania General Assembly for now its fifth year, where public education has been so deeply hollowed out and literally $4 billion plus of public education funding had been stripped out of our public school districts. And that was on top of what has been stolen from public school districts by charters that are mandated by the state, and under that legislation would be expanded under state law with no local input, no local school district input, all at the expense of our traditional public education system. So it isn't any more fairly described as reform than any silliness that has been described or characterized as reform in the past several years. It's anything but reform.
Right. And as I understood also, there was some language in there that would have allowed for like the takeover of a school district. Like if you remember when York was under attack from charter operators, they weren't sure if that was even legal or constitutional. I understood there was some portion in that may have allowed for that.
Oh, there absolutely was there was language that basically stripped the local school district of any input or control over that, and vested that all in Harrisburg. And that just seems to be antithetical to the reasons behind what we are told is the rationale for having 500 school districts in our 67 counties.
Right. So where is House Bill 530 now? Does it appear to move forward? Does it appear dead? What are we seeing?
Well, it is listed on the calendar, but they've gone over it in its order in the General Assembly at the moment. If there are any changes in one body, they would have to be concurred in the other body of the General Assembly. And today is scheduled to be the very last legislative day of the session. As a matter of the Constitution, the Pennsylvania General Assembly adjourns. The session adjourns effective midnight on November 30th, sine die. So if there are no additional legislative days scheduled, it seems as if that legislation is not going anywhere, but one never knows. There could always be an additional legislative day, and there could always be some end run with respect to a different bill on the calendar into which this legislation gets amended so that it gets retracked and fast-tracked in another way.
Right. Who knows what the Republican leadership will do come post-election. I wanted to ask about pensions. My email box slammed by right-wing groups like the Citizens Alliance, who are calling Franken pensions and all of this insanity, calling for more destruction of public sector pensions. Any talk on the pension bill moving?
Well, there's the pension bill. I anticipate will be voted in some fashion. What had happened yesterday was the House refused to concur in Senate amendments to the pension legislation. And that would have killed the legislation. But in an end run very late last night, the bill was committed to a House Senate Conference Committee composed of four Republicans and two Democrats. And they reported out a new pension bill. And that legislation would effectively do away with traditional defined benefit pensions as we know them and create a three-option pension system for public school employees and for state employees, one of which would be strictly a defined contribution plan and the other two of which would be something they call a stacked hybrid plan where people would be eligible for a defined benefit up to a certain relatively low annual salary level, and above that would be eligible only for a defined contribution plan. But to make matters worse, the way this legislation is written and is going to be considered, we suspect today, by the House and Senate, because reports of conference committees are automatically on the calendar of the two chambers in the very next legislative day, would basically cut pensions by somewhere between 20% and 50% while increasing the contribution on the part of the employees and decreasing the contribution that the state has not made for so long to the public employer sector. And this is the most offensive thing at all. It really does nothing to get rid of the existing claim pension debt in the state employees retirement system and the public school employees retirement system. And by cutting out the defined benefit piece of the plan that allows additional income to come into that plan for new participants and the investment income that earns, it will actually probably result in the debt being increased, not decreased, if this is passed.
Yeah, I go back to a couple of years back when this first started coming around. I remember the American Enterprise Institute's economist, this Michael Briggs guy, basically laid out exactly what you said was going to happen. They were going to make massive changes. It wasn't going to really save any money, but it was going to lower the benefits for the workforce. And he said, it's not going to save us much money. In fact, it may actually cost more, but ideologically, it's the right thing to do. And every time I see these things, I think of Briggs' statement that, doesn't matter. Ideologically, this is what we believe, and this is where we have to go. Even if it doesn't save money and it makes things worse, it's the ideology.
Well, this is the ideology that basically says that we're going to attract new teachers into our public schools at a time when we're losing teachers at a rate never before seen. and we're going to attract new teachers in by paying them less, charging them more, and decimating their future. And that's into whose arms we're then going to entrust our most precious resource, our children.
Right. But what we'll do then is we'll say there's a crisis and we'll bring in teaching machines and everything will be done online at home and in front of a computer, and we won't have to have teachers.
And we won't have to have buildings, and we won't have to have anything other than taxes that will be confiscated from people for the purpose of making the largest transfer of public funds to private funds in the history of the country.
Last question I've got for you, in looking at the unemployment compensation insurance program, there was some talk of possibly fixing what the Republicans screwed up back in 2011. Any movement on repairing the damage they did back then?
It's very possible, but it's still up in the air. There is some legislation pending that would mollify, if you will, minimize to some degree some of the damage that was done for workers who are high wage earners and earn their wages in concentrated periods of the year, like construction workers who work on a school building in the summer in renovating the school building and may work 7-12-hour days a week for a concentrated period, or folks who work on powerhouses or highway projects where they work intense periods during very attractive weather cycles, who had found that even though they were making significant wages and their employers were paying 100% of the unemployment insurance premium and the workers were paying on every penny that they earned, their contribution to the unemployment insurance system, they, under Act 60 that was passed a few years ago by the General Assembly, were disqualified and ineligible for unemployment insurance benefits. Now, the legislation that's before the General Assembly would change that a little bit so that some more people would be qualified for benefits who are presently disqualified. But the price of that is that benefits for all people who become unemployed in the future will be cut rather drastically. Caps on maximum benefits, regressions and retrenchment on weekly benefit amounts and things of that nature. But nonetheless, we're hoping that something gets passed because this foundational unfairness to people who have paid into the system all that the system asks and then are told they're not eligible. It's kind of like paying on a life insurance policy for your entire life. And then at the time you pass away, your heir is being told, oh, we forgot to tell you, we changed the rules last month, and we don't give you back your premium, but you don't get the death benefit.
Yeah, you're out of luck. But again, as I understand this, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, this is not this is coming from the Chamber of Commerce wanting this fixed because employers are struggling to keep people, especially construction workers, employed because they're going elsewhere because there's a huge gap for them.
Well, that's certainly part of it, but that's not all of it. There has been an extraordinary push on the part of the Pennsylvania State Building and Construction Trades Council and the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO and a very united labor movement to address and deal with this issue. What the labor movement had said initially was that we working folks would be willing to pay a modest increase in what our contribution is so that we can restore this without cutting benefits and without further restricting eligibility. But the leadership in the General Assembly just won't hear of that.
Right. Well, we've got a lot of things to look at in the next day, and hopefully we won't see any insanity before the end of November. But I appreciate you taking a little time for us.
Good to be here, Rick, and thanks. And I'm going to get back into the Capitol building and see what we can protect.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much, Irwin. Great talking with you. Our good friend, Attorney Irwin Aronson. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.